Cool.
Whoop!
Dude, I got a money shot.
There's a guy up there. He was notorious, and he would shoot at anybody who went by his gate. And so I went up there and just figured, well, I'll just talk to him before he shoots me.
Oh, jeez.
But he shot a few times, and I ran away, and then I kind of figured it out, and I finally went up to him, and I was like, could I pay you for access through your gate?
Hey there, folks, and welcome to episode 27 of Dark Starts, your backcountry splitboarding podcast. This one's a special one for me as we talk with somebody that I've always admired and am a big fan of. In this one, we talk with Jeff Pincero, Baldface Lodge out of Nelson, British Columbia. Jeff shares some great stories with us about how the lodge was founded, and we even talk a little bit about splitboarding along the way. We sincerely hope you all enjoy listening to this one as much as we enjoyed speaking with Jeff. So get out your spoons, juice harps, and jugs for a little backcountry music and listen along with Jeff Pincero.
Let's drop in with Jeff Pincero of Baldface Lodge. Hey, Jeff, how's your day going?
How's it going?
Oh, we're doing good.
Going great. Stoked to talk to you guys.
Us too. We just want to say thanks out of the gate. Get that out of the way. We really appreciate your time. I know you're super busy. You got lots of stuff on the go, and the season's about to start. Or whatever you guys are about to do, your mid-course pivot here. But yeah, what's your morning like? What's been going on for you already today?
Well, let's see. Today, I brought three Tupperwares full of Jamie's stuff into the office out of our garage and a coffee maker. Brought three of my kids to school. Came in here, had a meeting this morning with Volcom about a new kind of Zoom call seminar that we're going to do in I think it's going to be mid-November, like a call-in show with some backcountry experts. That'll be kind of cool. And then I'm doing this great podcast, Dark Starts. I'm stoked on that part. And then I got another call in like an hour, and then yet one more this afternoon. So
busy
day today.
Yeah, buddy. I hear you.
I love it. I couldn't imagine just sitting around.
Oh, I hear you.
Driving me crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Well, I actually do imagine sitting around.
Well, that is nice sometimes. I hear you. I know. We're busy
so
too.
So you just grab that axe and
go cut some wood.
Spend a couple hours. Oh, I was talking about a guitar.
Well, I don't play guitar, so I don't call them axes, but yeah, you guys do.
Yes.
So let's get into a little bit about maybe a little bit of the beginning of Baldface. We got a little bit of a taste of it from Mr. John Buffery. He was telling us a little bit about where it all came from and his interactions with Craig and then working with you guys. But he asked us.
I can't wait to hear his podcast. I can't wait to hear that.
It's good. It's good. He toned it down for us. Because I think
he's one of the best human beings I've ever known.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. We don't have to tell you, but yeah, he's such a stellar person, man.
I'm a better person. I'm a way better person for my time with him, undoubtedly. He's one of those guys.
You know what? I would agree with that. And I think I'm a little bit better just from getting to know him briefly.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on. Right on. He's definitely one of my mentors and a good friend.
Awesome. Yeah. He's going to become my mentor as well.
He's a lot of people's mentor. He's like it's kind of funny. It's kind of like, you know, like in my process, we could talk about Baldface. I guess I shouldn't interrupt the whole podcast to talk about.
No, that's okay. But give us who Jeff is. I mean,
I came up and not, you know, like a fan of snowboarding. And then I got to work as a rep, you know, a tech rep and as it was coming up, but always a fan. And then to come to Nelson with this kind of crazy idea and just, I remember when I first saw Craig Kelly, he was coming out of a CD store on Baker Street. That dates it a little bit. It was an actual CD. Remember music stores? So I was actually in front of the music store, and this insane van pulled up, and out popped Craig Kelly, who immediately I knew who he was, and he made eye contact with me, and he's like, "Hey, is there a CD store, record store in this town?" And I turned around, I'm like, "You parked right in front of it." And then that was my first interaction with him. And I remember going home to Paula. I was like, "Paula, holy shit. I saw Craig Kelly, the best dope." Like, and she's like, "Wow, Jeff, that's really neat." And it was probably like a fan seeing Justin Bieber or something. But to me, I remember telling her, I'm like, "You don't understand, to a snowboarder, that's like, that's like seeing Bob Marley if you're a fan walking down the street." I'm like, I'm like affected by this.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, it was like a year later when Buff actually made an introduction and we've had a game of chess and everything. And I just remember as it was happening, thinking how real everybody was and how that must be what it's like to be like someone who knew Gandhi in high school, you know, or whatever, because like Buff and Craig, I can put them on a huge pedestal in my life, and they both had a huge influence, but they also both were totally, they're friends. They're like regular people.
Yeah.
I know you hear that, but like, that's my memory, is like how profoundly their words affected me and yet how common our relationships are, you know? And I think sometimes when you think of people hanging out with Teddy Roosevelt or, you know, these massive figures of our time, you can kind of forget the human side of that. And the human side is really awesome with these people.
It's awesome to hear that too, because, you know, talking to Buff, I mean, he referred to playing chess with Craig as well.
And
he was telling a story. I can't remember who it was who came into his house when he was telling the story. He's like, "I was playing chess with Craig, and so-and-so comes into the house," and he's like, "Dude, fucking Craig Kelly."
That was me.
Oh, was it? Oh, maybe it was you.
That was me.
Yeah, dude. Well, I'm kind of getting that. I know what you're talking about, because it's happening for us talking to these, you know, Seth Scott and Jeremy Jensen and then DCP. It's just like, I'm like, my brain is not even handling it.
Because
I used to obsess watching them on a video, and now and now they're, I have this phone number on my phone. I'm just like, whoa. It's hard to fathom.
Right.
It's hard to even, still can't even, we were talking to DCP this morning, and it's just like, what? I don't even understand that right now, but okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. The fucked up part is you're probably older than most of those guys.
Yep.
And you think that they're all older. Like, I hang out with Jamie all the time, and it's like this heartbreaking thing that I'm actually like 3 years older than Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And in my mind, I don't know why, I always thought he was older than, you know, same with, I'm older than everybody.
Well, my first memory of Jamie Lynn is, I'm going to refer to the same movie video. It's Project Six, him out there bonking with, you know, with Rankwit and all those guys. And it was just, that's snowboarding for me was the beginning. It was back then, like 1993, two?
Yeah, three, that's, four, something like that.
Yeah, I love that movie. I still watch it now. Like, it's fantastic. Seeing it, seeing your wild. your household cat being Jamie Lynn is just unbelievable to me. That's awesome for you guys to have him as a, he loves the location, loves your what you guys are doing.
He's a good, super good friend too. And he's really been like, for all of COVID, he kind of posted up here because it was really bad down where he lives. So he stayed up here and just went back down actually recently so that he didn't step over any lines with immigration and all that stuff. He just milked it right to the end and he's just back down there now. But we really are sad. Like, he's part of, my kids know him and love him, and he's around all the time, and he's just such a wonderful guy. And I think even to compound it, Nelson brings out the best in people, a lot of people. So it was really just a great, you know, with all this weird stuff, it was like a really nice thing to have Jamie around for a solid stretch of time, you know?
Yeah.
It's great.
I'm sure he really enjoyed it as well. It seemed like he did. I see him skating with bulls and stuff and watching his Instagram and.
He needs to go rehab himself. His elbow looks like something out of RoboCop right now. He can't help himself from skating bowls, but he needs to chill. If you're listening, Jamie, like, put some arnica on that thing. Get an X-ray. He's made out of steel, man.
Do it in Canada so it doesn't cost you fuck all, right?
I don't know. I'll leave it to Jamie. He'll take care of himself.
Oh, man. Well, that's what happens with these athletes. Like, that's what they do. That's why he is where he is, because of all that. You know,
I got to hang out with all these guys all the time. I mean, you'd think it would be a real, I mean, it is. It's really fun going out in a helicopter with like Travis and Jamie. But then all of a sudden the helicopter flies away and Travis drops in and then Jamie drops in. And I'm like, what am I doing here? Like, no. Where's the easy way down? Like, where's the easy way down?
Can I have the B track, please?
God. Oh. And now my daughter comes every once in a while and she rides like crazy. And so now I even got to get humiliated by her when we go out. So it's a lesson in humility getting older, you know?
Yeah.
But I continually hang out with better riders that are younger all the time.
I bet, man. That's kind of what I'm hoping to do as well. I don't know what younger, but guys are just better, so I can get better. Because I find I ride with people around here that it's just I'm like, quote unquote, the better guy, but I'm not the better guy in the backcountry, so I need to learn that. So it's definitely humbling.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward. Well,
it's a lifetime of opportunity to just continue learning about something that's actually really cool.
Yeah.
Is the way I look at it. Like, you never know. Like, Buff doesn't know at all. He'll be the first person to tell you.
Oh, yeah.
But he's got his eyes open, and he's ready to see the thing he's never seen before.
Yeah.
That's he knows.
Oh, yeah.
And he's always open to it, and he's humble. And I try to really follow like that, too, where it's like it's an invitation to just keep learning for your whole life once you step off the path.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what's really cool about it is that it's all – there's no diploma in backcountry safety.
No, and when you know? Think, when you think you know, it all turns around and smashes you in the face, and you're like, I had no clue now.
Well, it could, and you know, that's one of the things that happens with our pursuit, but, you know, I guess you just deal with those things one at a time, and you learn from them, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Anyways, are we talking about splitboarding or what? You want to hear about splitboarding?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Yeah, you're probably tired of telling the story about Baldface, I'm sure.
No, dude. If it inspires anybody or people want to hear it, I'm happy to tell old Baldface stories. But
okay, it inspires me. I'll tell you that.
I
didn't grow up snowboarding in the 90s. In fact, I didn't start snowboarding until I was 32, and it was at Whitewater.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and I was a skier for a whole bunch of years before then, and then my kids were being born in Nelson, and so I was like, I'm going to go learn to snowboard. And rip up there. So I'm not that guy who – I didn't watch Project Six, and I didn't grow up idolizing all these guys. So when we're on the phone with DCP and Chad's fangirling over him, I'm like, dude, chill. What the fuck?
I was nervous before the podcast. I was like, Darren, I've never felt like this before. Usually I'm pretty calm, cool, collective. I'm like, we're about to talk to DCP. Holy shit.
But talking to you, funny. Jeff, for me, that you're my DCP buddy because I love Baldface. I love Nelson. My wife's from Nelson. I've hung out there a shitload. My sister-in-law lives right down the road by the Orange Bridge. You know, every time we come to town, we hang out, dig the town, dig the backcountry, love the whole idea of Baldface. I'm interested in learning how you got from – where are you from? Ohio, right?
Yeah, I was born in Cleveland, Ohio, and then, I was really fortunate to kind of convince my parents to let me go to this high school in New Hampshire called Proctor Academy, and it was like totally got me out of the city, got me into this amazing outdoor experience, really, with teachers that were like amazing, amazing teachers. So I got to go to that school, and then went to Colorado State. And just drank like an idiot the whole time I was there. Like honestly,
a good university student should drink.
I played guitar and I had a good time. I had a great time. I made some great friends, but I woke up like 3 years into it, just like, what am I doing? You know? And I went to my dad. I'm like, Dad, I'm an idiot. I don't know what to do with this thing. And I was a music major and he was amazing. And he knew I loved skiing and I had gotten into snowboarding. This was a long time ago. So this was very early days where we drive up Loveland Pass and just do car shuttles on snowboards and unlike wooden ones. We would do that, but it was always like on the way to skiing or back from it, you know, and then, did it a little bit in Idaho. Cause my parents had a place in Idaho, Sun Valley, where I learned how to ski and kind of saw the mountains the first time. So I went to Colorado State and ended up finding that there was a college in Lake Tahoe called Sierra Nevada College that had a 4-year ski business management, like program. So I rustled it all together and got a job and hustled and got to Sierra Nevada College. And I knew I wanted to be in the ski business. But I didn't know what. I just always liked kind of the idea of taking people out and giving them access has always really fascinated me. Cause whenever I go backpacking or fishing or mountain biking, it's so transformative on a daily basis, let alone when I think of poor people in a city that only get to do it for 1 week every year, you know?
Yeah.
And so that always really thrilled me. And I got through Sierra Nevada College and, amazing program there. It's a university now. And like, if you want to get into the ski business, it's kind of like being a welder. You got to learn how to do it.
You got to learn how to do it. Take the time.
And I give that place and Selkirk College here in Nelson, and there's Colorado College. But like, if you want to be in the ski industry and like run a lodge, like hell, get some education. I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah.
Cause I watch friends in the industry that are like ski guides who started businesses that don't understand like the basics of financial accounting or how debt works or what to expect in private equity markets and all that stuff. You just kind of learn. And half the guys I went to college with do that shit. So I've got a whole network of people to lean on. So anyways, that's my plug for education, but like, really glad I got one. And then met this really super ultra fine girl who was the ski racer at college. And I just knew right away this was the nicest, best looking, smartest person in the world. And, you know, we dated through college, but then she left after college and went to go see India and stuff. And I went on a tear split morning, actually all over the Cascades and the Sierra Nevadas. And ended up on a heli skiing trip that was a last minute thing. It's a long story with that one. Involves John Forrest, actually. And ended up meeting her dad on that ski trip. And he told me she was back from India and in Nelson. And so I drove over to Nelson and we totally fell in love again. And that's where Baldface was born, was I really wanted to get up to Nelson to be with Paula. And I was like, whatever it is, I'm going to figure something out. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of ready for something. I was 27 years old. I had done a little bit of work for K2 and some smaller brands, Glissade, and understood the industry a little bit, but had never really been heli skiing or cat skiing or any of that stuff. That was for rich guys. Yeah, and,
absolutely.
I don't know. I just started coming up to Nelson and being like, what opportunities are here? Mm-hmm. And I had a buddy, Jim Fraps, who had tried to go cat skiing a couple times, but it was always sold out. And he came up, and between me and him, we said, let's figure some shit out. And I had a little bit of money, cause I sold my house in Tahoe that I bought when I was in college. And I put like $50,000 in, and I was like, I am freaking ready to lose this money, but I'm also ready to totally have a great adventure.
Right.
And start a business and fail. I still always figure I'm going to fail, you know, but I'm like looking forward to it. Like it's okay.
Well, there's lots of learning. I mean? There's a lot of learning and failing forward.
Yeah. Or whatever. Everything starts off with intention, and it's not for me to steer the ship. It's for me to ride the river. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we just kind of kept putting one foot in front of the other and, you know, didn't really say it has to be snowcat or helicopter or touring or a job or whatever it was. I just kind of started letting things happen. And one by one, I was like snowshoeing. This was before splitboard. So I was snowshoeing up drainages around Nelson, you know, the area, right? Like up Give Out to the top, like up Marston Road and all the way up. I went up all the way up Enterprise Creek, Crusader Creek. I mean, I can go through them all. Redfish, went all the way up to Golden.
Holy shit.
Up to where Micah is, went up to where Chatter Creek is now. I had a snowmobile and a little Toyota pickup, and I would just go solo, totally reckless to see terrain. Cause there were no terrain photos then. It was only 1 to 20,000 maps or 1 to 50,000 maps.
Okay. Yeah.
So to really get a feel of it, I wanted to see what was going on. And
yeah,
it's really weird looking back at it now, but it was just like we did one thing at a time and we accomplished a lot every day. Gotcha. And we ate a lot of ramen noodles and drank a lot of Kootenai beer. And man, had some great people step in and kind of help steer the ship. But as it kept growing and turning into things, we would just attack it one thing at a time.
Nice.
And I listened to a really amazing guy named Tim Ripple, who knew this area over here and always thought it'd be suited up good for something like this. I had Buffery helping me, and, you know, Craig basically and Buffery pointed to the area where Baldface is now, and they were like, you should do it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I had visions of bigger terrain and this and that, and they were like, that is something special.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't exist. So I really took their advice, and Tim Ripples and me and Fraps and Paula just started trying to figure it out. And it is a really long story, all the details of that shit, but it has been a wild ride, and I'm the luckiest guy in the world for being put in the position I'm in to allow it to happen, you know?
Mm-hmm. So the initial forays back into that area where the lodge is now and all the terrain that you're riding, I mean, how did you guys access that originally? Was there any roads to get in there? Was it sled?
So there's this, like, there's a road that is closed in the wintertime due to a winter ungulate population. And that road was actually being built when we showed up in like 1998. And there's another road that goes in there that's known as the old CBC road, but it goes across a couple of pieces of private property.
Does it go to the
and
tower?
And those people...
Does that go to that tower above pulpit there?
And so... these landowners definitely did not want people going through their land. Being a Nelson person, you might be able to figure out why people don't want random people going through their land, large pieces of land away from town. And so I'm dopey California guy, like sniffing around. And, you know, there's a guy up there. He was notorious and he would shoot at anybody who went by his gate. And so I went up there and just figured, well, I'll just talk to him before he shoots me.
Oh, jeez.
But he shot a few times and I ran away, and then I kind of figured it out, and I finally went up to him and I was like, could I pay you for access through your gate? I really want to check this piece of land out up here. I may want to start something up here, but I got to get access and I don't want to sneak around you and play some bullshit cat and mouse game. So can I just like give you some money? And he's like, ah. He was a really crotchety dude, had his own mill there, and fuck you and this stuff. And then finally, you know, he's like, give me $1,000. And I was like, I don't have $1,000.
That's 200 bucks.
I'm like, but I have, like I said, I have like $700, dude, and I will give it all to you for access this winter. Just let me go through the gate, man. And he hummed and hawed, and he's like, oh, give me that and some beer and whatever. So we figured it out, and we would go up on this ratty old – I had a Nordic 50. Do you know what kind of sled that is? It's like an old Ski-Doo with one ski on the front and a really wide track on the back, right?
Yes, I know that is now.
Holy shit.
So I had a Nordic 50 and a Polaris 600 RMK.
Dang.
With a big track on it. And we would just go up and like – we were so bad at snowmobiling too, and the winters were huge back then, so we would just basically go up and dig holes and then snowshoe away from it up till we could get on an alpine ridge and then start exploring every day. And it was fucking awesome. That guy Paul, that guy, he shot at me one more time when I was like unlocking the gate, and I had a couple young guys with me. And I ran over to him, and he came over on a snowmobile, and he had a big smile on his face, and I was so mad. And I was like, what are you fucking – what is wrong with you? Like, I gave you $700 in a 12-pack. Like, what are you fucking shooting at me for? And he's like, oh, I was just shooting over your head. I wasn't sure if it was you or not. I figured it. Jesus. You had a key, so you just go. And I lost it, and I was like, dude, I'm from America, and I'm from Cleveland. And I don't even know what a fucking warning shot means. But if you ever shoot a gun at me again after I paid you to go across here, I will kill you in your sleep. There's no warning shots.
Yeah.
I'll just come in and do it. You understand? And after that, we were like best friends. He thought that was the best stand-up ever. And I was like, I was really mad. I didn't even know it was coming out of my mouth. But I was afraid for the guys I was bringing in, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And then after that, we were always really cool. He's like, oh, yeah, no, I keep sleep with one eye open knowing you're in town.
Oh, shit.
Of course, I would never harm anybody like that. But I think back in those days, you kind of got to play these games and like make sure you assert yourself and yeah. get in. Like they spray painted Yankee go home on the road when we started up there.
Oh my God.
You know, like Nelson's a great town, but Nelson's not like a place. They don't welcome you here. It's nice for tourists and stuff, but back then it was a very protected area, you know? Yeah. New guys, not so much. But now, you know, I've been here 25 years. People still think we're new in town. So
who knows? That's funny, actually.
Yeah.
Too funny.
So let's see. Story. So that's kind of the story of how I guess we got it going. We would go up there, check out the terrain.
Yeah.
We snowshoed a lot, and we were smart about how we did it. I put in one trail up, and we used that same – it was very safe, and we used the same one all the time, right? So we weren't, like, ski-touring up new zones and checking out all that stuff. In some ways, the limitation of the snowshoes made us kind of be a lot safer back then.
Yeah.
And then that eventually led a couple winters later to us applying for everything, and we built a dome back there, a geodesic dome.
Oh, yeah.
And we lived in that for a winter, and it was pretty awesome. But then it got collapsed in the spring because we couldn't get in there to shovel it off. So we got a bigger, better dome, and we built that. And that lasted like 2 or 3 years. And the whole time we were starting to do day cat skiing out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would bring people across the lake on a boat and drive them up to the dome in a truck. And then the cats were waiting at the dome, and we would go up every day. And it was kind of cool. We did that for 3 years, I think, 1 year with one cat and 2 years with two cats. And then we decided to build a lodge. And so that was a really challenging time. So we built a road up to like the lodge is in an incredible spot. Like the lodge is in an amazing piece of the world for sure. But it was a lot of work building it up there. So we're still building it up there. So, you know, we scratched out a spot, kind of built the road in, and we got some timber up there, and we built a timber frame that's still there today. And then we got a bunch of ATCO trailers and popped them up there.
Okay.
And we did the first winter like that. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing thinking back on it. It was totally amazing.
Yeah, because you feel like something's actually starting to happen opposed to the dome roof now. It's like you're getting buildings up here.
But it was a huge sacrifice. It was like we had a plan to build out a whole lodge, but then 9/11 happened and all the money in the world disappeared. So we kind of had to fucking shuck and jive and figure out how to, because we had already sold seats kind of. So it was like, it was a stressful winter, but we had Craig on board and we had Burton supporting us and we had some definite things happening. But then, you know, of course, Craig passed away that winter, which sucked because he was a great buddy and a good partner in it. And really looking forward to, you know, having Craig as a partner and a steering kind of guy.
Absolutely.
Would have been great.
Absolutely.
So that was a bit of a kick for everybody and whatever. His inspiration carries on. And so then it was like me and Buff and Lee and Fraps and a few other people. And next season, got her going. Fawcett, Mark Fawcett was around back then. Mm-hmm. And Brad. Got a lot of people who are still around there. That's amazing. And yeah, we just started doing it, and then it was kind of like cranking along, and then we ended up going up to three cats, which was pretty cool. In 2006, we built those chalets.
Yeah.
And so we went from two cats to three cats, but then the Norwalk came to us in 2006, so that's a gastrointestinal illness that makes people vomit and diarrhea not feel so good. So we had to learn how to deal with a kind of a pandemic-like condition then, and we made it through. We learned a shit ton, and it was actually, in retrospect, a good thing, but it sucked when we went through it. And then we cranked up for a few more years, and it was going real good. And then I worked with Travis a bunch on That's It, That's All, and some other stuff. Got to know him pretty well, and then he's like, hey, I got this crazy idea.
Oh, no.
And so I was filming something with Teton Gravity Research. We built like the largest gap jump in the world in the spring 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were planning on, we had been building with JP Martin and building. This gap jump is insane. And then the lodge collapsed. We had an insane amount of snow in April and a lot of wind. And we were watching the Canucks in the playoffs one night, and we just started hearing these really loud snapping noises.
Oh, no.
And we were like, what the hell is going on? And so the next day I climbed in underneath, and it's a super long story that involved a lot of litigation and stuff. But, you know, between some engineers and building inspectors and install and the amount of snow and all the stuff, the roof slowly collapsed on Mother's Day. And surprisingly enough, that was then TGR came in the next day.
Oh, shit.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, we could do this. The kitchen's still there. You guys can stay in the cabin. So we ended up, I mean, I had such a great crew. Mark Carter, DCP, Sage, Tim Durch, I think, was up there. Tom Wallace was up. It was like Todd Jones. It was like a dream for me, right? So we pulled off this photo shoot. And at the same time, Travis wanted to do the Supernatural contest the next year. Mm-hmm. So I got that photo shoot done, long story short, rebuilt the lodge and got that course built so we could open the next year and do Supernatural. And that really put us on the map in a lot of ways. And Absolutely. It was an amazing experience working with Buffery and Travis and Lee and the team. Damien, it was next level. That was the coolest thing. And to pull off something that was – completely out of thin air and do it as well as we did it with no injury, except DCP hurt his knee, but you know, that's cause he's an animal, not cause anything was wrong. Right. He went too fucking big.
I actually remember that. I watched that. I rewatched.
Yeah. He, I was like, dude, that's awesome. And then it was like, oh my God, he's going to case it. It
yeah.
Like,
I remember that. Yeah.
You know,
but, it's pretty incredible to have that, like to pull together a contest that, well, it was a contest in that size with those kind of riders and that caliber. Having everybody there, that's just like under one roof. It's just, I would be drooling just watching.
It was incredible.
Video camera would
just and we actually had twins. We had twins that year too.
Oh, wow.
It was really rad. Dude. And here's a funny side story. Travis and I like to bet on things, kind of little side bets. We don't do it so much anymore because, anyways. It would be like, oh, you got to give the twins a bath and feed them. And me and Paul are going out to dinner if you do that. You know, is that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I do have many pictures of Mr. Cool Guy Travis with the twins, like with their frog tiles, like giving them baths and stuff. Nice. He's like a younger brother showing up. It was great. Oh, man. So he was really dedicated to making the contest happen. Mm-hmm. But by extension, you know, he's really invested in the whole story and my life and stuff. And it's super trippy to have this opportunity to do these huge events. Like Craig came in when we were starting Baldface. Travis came in when the lodge collapsed and we really needed some help and some air under our wings. It's like, I'm so grateful to have my snowboarding community and the family and the larger family. And it's like such a great resource to draw on. Just like I was saying before about college, it's like, it's a whole nother community of people who really care and really get it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not an accident that those things happen. No. I don't think. No, I think we're surrounded by really good people with great intention and you, like you yourselves, you're creating a podcast. That's intention. And I think you're going to find that when you create it, you'll fill it with really amazing things.
It already has been, man. It's been huge.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like I said to you off air when we talked the first time, I was going to apply for a job in your marketing department. I was willing to sell everything here and go live in Nelson to do that, even though it wasn't feasible. But I was
waiting. I'm the marketing department.
Though. I know, but you were looking for a guy. I was like, oh,
I know. We were. We put it out there. We ended up getting somebody that was a little more on the retail front because our retail has been doing really good and our e-commerce kind of started turning into a thing.
Yeah. Well, it's surreal for me to have you on the phone. Because I listened to your podcast on you know, the Snowboard Project, and I heard you get on Paths, and I'm just like, I get to talk to Jeff, right?
Really?
I know,
I'm
right?
A loser.
Fuck that way, dude. Your story is amazing.
You know, you are who you surround yourself with, and you're not a loser because you know the people that help you grow and your business get more exposure. They're loving and they just love what you're doing and they want to keep promoting it. Like having, you know, who was it this winter when you had oh my god, the race DC boots. I'm having a brain fog right now.
Oh, Ken.
Ken, yeah. Having Ken come up there, bring you guys a, you know, side by side with tracks and do a full video shoot.
Ken Block.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It is all
he left that thing.
I know he did. I watched the video.
No shit.
And when he
brought- You know, I called Ken. Here's a Ken's. Like, I saw a picture of that Raptor tracks.
Right.
On, like, Facebook or something. Like, well, someone on the inside got a picture of that and posted it on Facebook. And I immediately called my friend Benny Pellegrino, who is the king of Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Literally the best guy, Benny. Everybody knows Benny.
I've heard you and talk I'm like, Benny, about him. Yeah.
I'm like, do you know Ken Block? And he's like, yeah, I know Ken. I go, he has to bring that fucking thing up the bald face.
Oh, dude. That-
I'm like, it's just too stupid that he's doing donuts in a parking lot. He needs. Right? I have 200 kilometers of cat road.
Yeah.
And I want to see what that thing can do. That's dude, the future.
That video and was sick.
Like 15 minutes later, my phone rings and it's like, hey, Jeff, Benny told me to give you a call. It's Ken Block. What
fuck
do you got?
Me.
And I'm like, fuck, what? You're what? What? He goes, yeah, let's bring it up. How's late November, early December? You got enough snow? You want to wait? I'm like, yeah, sure, Ken Block. Yeah, let's do this thing, you know?
Right?
And then same thing I was saying before, like shows up, Ken Block, you know, nicest freaking guy.
I believe
totally that. One of like granted, everybody wants a piece. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But you get him up to the lodge. Great guy. No problem.
Oh, yeah.
Like he kicks my ass at ping pong like nobody
nice.
You would ever imagine.
That's awesome.
But is that, like, is right, that saying
total,
something?
He's
Jeff?
A total jerk when he gets a ping pong paddle in his hand.
Oh no, it's, because it's, he's the, it's the competition probably, side he, of him. Yeah,
he probably has. You know, he puts up that he does this like kickboxing. So I shouldn't talk shit because he would kick the shit out of me. He will anyways. But I think it's all a front. All this kickboxing training he does because it's all about pong.
Yeah.
It's all pong training because he's unworldly good at pong.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I can't even hit the ball back, so there we go.
Well, I play a lot of ping pong, but Ken clearly plays a lot more ping pong.
Well, you got to remember his hand-eye coordination is out of control with his driving. Like with
totally.
Like, you know, they're race car drivers, you know, Darren loves watching F1. I
do too. I'm a huge F1 fan. He brought Lewis to the lodge.
What?
That's
fun. Yeah, stuff. We had Lewis to the... All right. Lewis comes to the lodge with Ken.
Dude, this is... Wait. I'm fucking... My mind is blowing up right now. Yeah, Jeff Pensiero telling a story about Lewis Hamilton and his fucking
lodge.
Yeah, so
Lewis comes out to the lodge, and I didn't really know at the time that much. My brother watches a lot of F1, but since I've started Bald Face, I did not pay attention. I do now, like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And... So Ken's like, yeah, this guy is a monster guy. He really loves snowboarding. He wants to come out. Can he come? I'm like, yeah, great. So I end up talking to this guy, and he's Lewis, and he's a super nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, answers the phone, calls me up. Hey, can I bring some friends? What's the snow going to be like? Like an excited guy. And then he shows up. Really nice guy. But Jamie's there, and Lewis comes up, and he's like, Jeff, I just saw, is that Jamie Lynn walking down the hallway? And I'm like, yeah, Jamie's up for Christmas. He's like, we're going to be here at the same time.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, would you mind introducing me? And I'm like, what?
What?
I'm like, Lewis, like, Jamie's a big car guy. He has a garage. He has like a 40 Ford and I know he has a Super B and a Charger. Like he's pretty down with cars. And you're like a race car driver, right? He's like, yeah, I'm the F1 world champion. I'm like, oh, I thought you were like, you're the champ. He's like, yeah, you know, oh cool. So he and Jamie end up going downstairs into the tuning room for like an hour and a half and just become they're talking about tattoos, they're talking about art, they're talking about music, about cars. And Lewis is a huge fan of snowboard, like massive fan. So I think it was really cool. They kind of have a little friendship, and you wouldn't expect that, you know, Jamie motorcycle kind of guy and Lewis is like really clean cut, vegan and healthy and aware and conscious, great world role model, you know?
He is.
Not that Jamie isn't, to be frank. Jamie is a great role model.
Oh, yeah.
But, oh, yeah.
It's really cool to see Baldface being able to bring people like Ken and Jamie and Lewis all together, and they all just love snowboarding. And they're all just people. Yeah. We're all just people.
I know.
We're
dude, all that's people. Amazing. That's amazing. Awesome. Yeah. Wow. Wow. Hey, I want to touch back real quick on the on Travis and Supernatural. So, because I'm really curious, like, I'm sure his mind works like crazy, right? Like, did he have the inception of using Baldface for Supernatural before he came up with TGR and all that group? And or is it something he discovered when he was up there and just said, dude, we need to fucking do something right now?
No, he had been looking because he did Natural Selection. And then you know, he's always looking for stuff. And he said to me, he said, I'm looking for like a east-northeast facing slope with a sustained pitch and a large area at the bottom. I'm kind of thinking of like an avalanche pathy kind of thing, but I want it to be really steep. He's like, keep your eyes open, you know, because I fly around a lot, see a lot of stuff. And as he and I kept talking, I'm like, what about this? He'd be like, ah, oh, it's not quite right. And then finally he sent me a couple of pictures and he was like, you know, mountain biking, how they build stunts. It's kind of like that, but on a way bigger scale with no landings, like natural landings off of everything. Like, and so we worked together. We started conceptualizing it. And finally I was like, dude, I don't want to say it's here, but like Scary Cherry is the fucking spot. Cause Scary Cherry had a bunch of trees at the top that we could use for material as we gladed it. And then it had a big open area that if we kept avalanching it, we would end up with a massive pile of snow that we could build jumps on. So I was like, Trav, in my mind, I keep coming back to this face, but you want something bigger. You want something with a different aspect. But like, do you see all the reasons why this would work? And he was like, dude, that face totally works. And it's close to launch and let's do it. Perfect. And so, yeah, we had to go to the government and I'm like, hey, I got this crazy idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
totally.
I'm just trying to get that stuff through forestry, and I'm like, you know, no, it's gonna be great for snowboarders, and you know, we'll jump off it, and it'll be great. And so, yeah, I figured it out, you know, with a lot of help, and we hired this amazing crew of lumberjacks and carpenters and snowboarders, and we just went to work and started building this stuff. And if you really look, like between year one and year two, they changed the name to Ultranatural because BC didn't like us using Supernatural.
Oh.
But when we changed it to Ultranatural, you can actually, if you look close, you know, the first year we built stuff, mm-hmm. Travis really was steering the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And Travis is another animal altogether. And if you look, mm-hmm. there's a lot of shit that's way too big to hit
yeah.
in Supernatural.
Oh, yeah.
And so we went back for Ultranatural and like pulled stuff down a bit. Here's the scary part. When we first built it, Travis showed up in like week three and he's like, this shit's too small. Make it bigger, make it bigger. The original wow. shit that he had us build was like Lucas Dabari's air would have been an average air.
Hmm.
Like they all were over 800 foot airs oh, on geez, that course. Shit. And we were like, Travis, this is fucking crazy. If it was up to him, they all would have been that size. So, oh, you know, man. I know from working with him that you kind of, I believe in his vision. I'm blind. I'm down to build it. I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
But I also am in a unique position to be like, I did it your way. Can we just like
slow it down?
Do it so guys like me can hit it too, you know? Yeah. And that maybe you could trick it instead of just survive it. Or yeah. maybe you could, you know, we started realizing like, jump one could lead to jump two and three if oh, we didn't make it so big, you
right,
know? So
right.
We're going back in and redoing it because we're doing it again this winter.
Well, that makes sense because I watched the video and, you know, you're watching guys like, you know, McMorris and he's like wiping out because he's like, this is massive in the back.
Yeah.
You know, and he, you know, only guys like Gigi Ruff are stacking crazy lines and it's like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, and Gigi's level of riding is at a whole... Wow. You know, it's with
they all are though. Dude, every single person in that thing,
nuts.
Like McMorris and Sollers were really young, yeah. and so we were worried about them. I'll tell you, Mark was just freaked out. That was in his head.
Yeah.
He was fanboyed out on that first one, and then Sollers, he held it together like a champ.
Mm-hmm.
He rode pretty freaking good, I thought, and he was like 17 or 18 when he did it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm impressed. There was nobody that didn't impress me. Torstein.
Oh man, you know, that like, guy he's awesome in the backcountry.
He had the heart. That was his wake up call. He did worse than McMorris in the first one.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I think he fell off the first two features and that was the end of that.
He did, and he was just yeah. it's not Torstein, it was in his head. And yeah. his competitions have always been like show up at a jump, get in the mindset, turn on the music, hit it. Dude, this is like Terrier's talking shit to you, then you walk over, and then like Travis is there, and then like Gooch is there, yeah. Jamie's fucking, you know, it's like yeah. for a young guy, like, holy fuck.
Yeah, dude.
You know? No shit.
I can only imagine. Yeah, Terry is definitely very competitive, there's no question.
Another one of the night, dude, I got a really bad concussion a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, dang.
People can say whatever they want about Terrier. I'll let the story stand for itself.
I love, he's number one in my books.
There's he no fucking, question. speaks his mind and he is what he is. Mm-hmm. And I love him in a lot of ways. And he's been a dick to me too, but I get it. And he's a Viking.
Exactly. Okay.
I got a concussion and I was keeping it quiet because I worry about things. And a couple people knew. And he called me and he's like, "What kind of helmet do you have?" And I was like, "I don't know. I think I'm getting a Smith." And he's like, "I'm sending you the one that I have. It's actually the best helmet in the world. Sweet protection. There's nobody even comes close. I will send one for you." And it was like, holy fuck, Gary is sending me a helmet.
Right?
And then this helmet shows up. Sure enough, it's got the MIPS and the right shape and everything. And I was like, well, if Terry sent me a helmet, I guess I'm wearing a helmet every day. You know what I mean?
No kidding.
Like, what a dude.
Yeah.
No. You know?
And they were just there trying out a whole bunch of boards, too, at the end of the season here, right?
That was really fun. We had a great time.
I've seen those video clips. Again, I still watch videos like a little kid because it's my drug. I just love it. Love it.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate those times. We really had a good time with Danny and Terry on that one.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The snow was shitty.
Yeah, they made the best of it, though. It looked really good.
We had so much fun. I was like, let's ride the cat ropes. Yeah. It'll be fun. And we had so much fun.
Yeah, they were boosting. Yeah. It was good. He's trying to give away that board, actually, that he was riding. It's like, oh, it's in pretty good shape. He shows a picture. I'm like, dude, that thing's fucking destroyed. And you rode it, like, for a weekend.
All of his boards.
Fuck, man. Yeah, he's gnarly. Always been a huge he's definitely the snowboarding god to me. It's just the way he rides. It's just unbelievable. Love it.
Yes.
His style is so sick and so unique.
Hey, so should we talk some splitboarding, guys?
Yeah, do that. Give me when did you start splitboarding?
Now that it's 12:19.
Yeah, let's squeeze some in while we still
Let's squeeze some splitboarding in.
Yeah, and then we can talk to you again.
What's your experience with splitboarding, Jeff? When was the first time you saw a splitboard, touched one?
Jeez, I split a Glissade 175 probably back in 95, something like that.
Those are the rockstar days of snowboarding, dude, right there.
Yeah, and then we got stuff from this guy, Cowboy, out in Utah. He was like the very beginning of making little splitboard parts and stuff. And he had these Vole, he was working with Vole, and it was the original kind of pucks and slide system with the T-bolts on it. Mm-hmm. So I ran one of those, but didn't really like it that much, to tell you the truth. I had snowshoes back then. I had these little small snowshoes.
Yeah.
And I could crank, and it was really windy where I went all the time. So, like, snowshoes were just fast as hell. Mm. And they fit in a backpack. And I tried. But then when I came up here, I brought my snowshoes, and I still was kind of like a snowshoer with the snowboard on the back. And then when Craig got involved, Burton was making their split, their original one, with the kind of butterfly wings on the top and this, like, plate that had a cam on it that locked down. And so, you know, through Craig, I was getting boards and met JG and Doyle over at Burton, who were the designers, who are incredible people. And they had a different take than the Vole, and we were helping them with that. And by helping them, I mean, that system was really challenging to work. And there were a lot of little mini parts in it, and it gets really fucking cold when you're outside. So I lost a lot of fingernails. Swore a lot, got my fingers caught in little pieces. You know, it was one of those kind of systems that should have worked great, but it was a blessing, but it was also like it wasn't evolved when we were using it. So we always were like figuring it out. And that was great, actually. I'm not bitching about it. We were using really top quality equipment that was a little, you know, R&D
for the day. Yeah.
And what a gift to be able to work on R&D stuff with Craig and Burton was like, I was losing my freaking mind. It was great.
No kidding.
And so I rode that for a while. And then Burton stopped doing that. And then I jumped on some Spark stuff because they started up. And I probably had the Spark set up for like 3 or 4 years. And then I got Karakoram for a little while. And then I'm back on the Spark, basically the Burton Hitchhiker now.
Yeah, that's what we're both on here as well.
Yeah, and it's like, man, if you ever go to a thrift store or a used sporting goods store and see an old Vole system and then look at that new Hitchhiker system.
It's like the same?
It's just properly evolved. Yeah. It's the same shit. Yeah. But, I mean, it's just so refined and it works so good now that
Well, I think Spark did things pretty smart by collabing. They just did a collab as well with Nitro. So they'll be coming up with a Nitro binding with the Spark system. I think that's the best way to grow your business.
Well, what I love about that...
Oh, I forgot to mention, I did have the Union system too, correct, which I really should heap tons of praise on.
Yes, they work well with you guys. They did lots of work with you guys.
I mean, I can't tell you how Martino and Kleckner and Johan and Gumby, not only is the Union product just all about snowboarding, all coming from snowboarding, like unique design. You know, they listen to guys like Gooch and Travis, and like their product is Italian Ferrari quality product, straight up. But it's hard to get. And I don't know. I should probably go back to it. I just, you know, I really have a lot of love for Burton, and I have a lot of love for Union, and I have a lot of love for Volcom, and I have a lot of
love for the whole industry, just, pretty much as a whole, really. But
to everybody's credit, I've never tried to be a sponsored person, and I'm so grateful for this stuff, but I'm, what do you call it when you're in love with more than one person, but that's okay?
Polygamist?
Polygamist. I'm polygamist in the snowboarding world is what I am. Yes. But they all let me be, and I think that's good because, honestly, I get calls from a lot of people that are like, have you tried this? How does that compare to ours? Like, I don't think there's a lot of people that actually have no allegiance but allegiance to everybody. Mm. You know what I mean? I mean, when the Union thing came out, there was one thing on it. I went for two tours. It was like, this sucks. You got to change that.
Yeah.
And they did.
Of course.
But I don't know that a lot of people that are getting paid by them can say it in such short words, you know?
Yeah. They got it with tender gloves, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Even though the R&D department they want to hear the crap. They want to hear why does it suck? Because that makes it better. They want to hear it. They don't want the fluff. Yeah. Oh, this is fantastic. Meanwhile, the people that are buying it at my level are like, this thing's, you know, it's janky or got some issues.
You don't ever want to put a backcountry product out that's like, this is great, but you got to get the butts out of the way, because the butt means you tear your fingernail off in the backcountry.
Or it falls apart. Or that it doesn't work. You're hiking out.
Yeah. One little screw, you know, falls out.
Yeah.
Well, you want to be the equipment that nobody has to carry spare parts for.
That's what you want.
Well, zip ties, my friends.
Exactly.
Zip ties and splitboarding are a necessity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You can get out of a lot of jams with
just
the right
about.
I'm going to throw it out into the universe again, but I'm waiting on Burton step-ons with a splitboarding system.
I wonder.
Straps are a pain in the ass. I'm getting old. See, he likes the straps. I'm not.
Not a fan.
Out.
So splitboarding. So here's Jeff Pintiero. He's done some splitboarding. He's got Bald Face Lodge. Cat. You know, do you still get out and do any splitboarding, Jeff? Do you find the time? Well, do you find the want to get out there and do that? I mean, I'm going from the head of a guy who's like looking at what you've got at your fingertips that you get to ride all the time. And I'm like, why the fuck would you want to bother splitboarding?
Yeah,
exactly. I splitboard a little bit early in the season, and that's more like just fitness and getting out.
Yeah.
And I'll drop the split when we drop into areas that I'm not sure will be easy to get out of.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll splitboard when we're on photo shoots and stuff, so that if I just got to huff back uphill or somebody gets hurt or something, it's real quick. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, I ride the Resonator or an Asmo most of the time now. And I just have verts in my backpack,
right,
and collapsible poles. And so I think a further evolution of the splitboard, this is me being a whatever I am, powder surfer, but I kind of think the ultimate tool is a really light powder surfer and a pair of verts or good snowshoes.
Well, have you seen Jeremy Jensen's splits?
Yeah. I love Jeremy, but I don't even think you need them. Because the verts are
I kind of agree with that. I think, you know,
powder surfing and they're, you know what, for me British Columbia in the snow we have.
Yeah.
Right.
But we're in really deep snow sometimes. And it's like, it's kind of nice to have the verts because you can just smash out one trail one time right up and you reuse it.
I gotcha. I gotcha.
And I'm not going, I'm 51 years old now and I got a big job. Like, I'm not going for giant ski touring days. Mm. You know, I maybe this winter I will more, but back in the earlier days when I was younger, I just went because it was like mountain biking.
Right.
It's just fun to go.
Yeah.
And I don't seem to have that time anymore. And also my body's old. Like it takes me a while to recover from huge days. So I need
some CB days.
I do. Or I need, when I go out and totally deplete myself, it takes a couple days to just feel good again now. And I used to be able to do it every day, all day.
Yeah.
So I think there's a part of me that's like, I don't want to go out with the young guys and get my ass handed to me, trying to keep up for a whole day either. Because I've been that young guy before.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I should probably rededicate myself. But frankly, this might be the winter where I do a lot more. But once you've been on that resonator, it's hard to get on a snowboard with all those straps and all that shit. Like, no it's so doubt. Much better. Probably bad to say it, but good to say it. But like it, once you, I've been able to invest the amount of time you have to invest to get good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But once you're good at it, it's like everything. I go in the heli with it. I took it to Japan. I took it to Greenland. Like I take it everywhere. That's my choice.
Well, it's the same thing. Yeah. That's what Jeremy Jensen said, the same thing. He goes, it's a whole new evolution of snowboarding. Like that just,
it is.
It just changes everything. It's back to the roots, man. It's back to the roots of what snowboarding.
But have you seen those resonators? They're like alien little potato chips of like marble, like chemistry. I don't even know what the hell how it works, but God damn it, that thing works so good.
Tons of fun, hey?
Tons of fun.
You're just reminiscing right now. I love it.
So while we still got you, what is there's some changes, right? Because of what's going on in the world today with Baldface and the lodge and some pivoting that you're doing. So do you mind touching base a little bit on that?
We're not going to operate our normal 3-on, 4-off, bringing tons of people from out of the area in this winter. And the bottom line with that is I know I can make that call and still open in 2022. I know this. But if I opened up, it's too much risk.
Mm-hmm.
Like we might not make it through this season if I open.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, I said, let's just batten down the hatch and weather the storm. We're going to do a bunch of improvements on the lodge. But at the same time, we've gone to government and asked if we could have a product where we could fly people daily out of Nelson. You fly up into our tenure, you get one run, and then you go ski touring for the day or split boarding for the day, and then you get picked up by the heli in the afternoon and back to Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
So we're waiting to see if we can get approval for that, but if we can, we'll be running a program like that this winter. We're looking at doing some CAA, ACMG, you name it, classes up there to try to get the backlog of those guides through. And we got a few private opportunities that we're going to look into, some high dollar, high net worth kind of people coming up and doing, private events.
Some TV stuff or something like that.
Yeah. And then we've got Travis's contest that he wants to do this year. And he's got a really cool contingency if they can't get across the border. So I think, we've got a full plate of stuff to do. It's just not what we've been doing traditionally. And then we'll get back to that next year, even better than ever.
But I feel like people really need to, if more than ever right now is show that you're not just backing down. You got to be up there socially, social media, videos, movies, whatever. This is the time to keep pushing forward and showing that you can pivot. That could, we talked about earlier, this could be a whole new product you guys could be offering, just touring period, having a whole section where you just tour. Right?
We could. And my guides would love that. And it's just a matter of finding beds and, time
at Go Trailers.
That's kind of what we're working on. No, we're not getting Atco Trailers.
I think we're not doing that.
I'm just fucking with
But that. The lodge is going to be pretty kick ass on the other side of this for sure. We've got some really cool plans to do some really, really innovative and interesting things up at the lodge.
So is that adapting the current lodge, or are you putting up any new buildings? I would imagine if you're doing that would have been a summer thing. Hey?
Well, no, because we have this whole winter and then we have all next summer.
Right.
So we're going to do like a big lodge remodel this winter, like tearing the walls out, putting more bathrooms in, single occupancy rooms, that kind of stuff. Nice. And then we're going to build new stuff over next summer.
Now the current main lodge, when was that? That was that 2012 that you opened that?
No, the main lodge, let's see, the original lodge was built 2002. Then we built the chalets in 2006. And that actually also reconfigured those Atco trailers. And then in 2011, the Atco trailer portion collapsed and we rebuilt that. So the current situation's been there since 2012, really.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
8 years. And then we just built a new building up there over the last 3 years, but it's a residence up there from one of my partner or my partner.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. Lives up there.
Yeah. He does in the winter. Yeah. Well, whenever the snow's good.
Yeah.
Right.
Nice.
He's amazing. I have a great business partner, like great business partner.
That's killer.
Definitely yeah. helps. Can we talk a little bit about what you guys do with Pat Moore beginning of the year? Because
that's
a
great thing to talk about.
Because this is really about, you know, people learning something new about backcountry, you know, picking something out. I know we want to talk about Baldface forever. We will get you back on, but hopefully we'll be in person. That would be nice.
Yes.
But because that's really important to us, because I really want to get Pat on the show, because what he's offering every year, getting all the, you know, the big boys back together to do a recap, is something that the average person like myself and Darren, I got my tickets or I got this, I've done it. But it's like a recap is important. So,
well, what it is that we were watching friends put themselves into compromised positions because their ambition, mm-hmm. you know, outweighed their experience level.
Right.
And this started becoming a trend about 6-7 years ago. We were like, God, man, there's too many close calls. And you had these young guys coming up.
Yeah.
You know, the Sam Taxwoods and the Cams. And it was like, man, these guys are like so good, but they didn't go through the process. You know, like they don't know how to ride a snowmobile, and yet they're shooting for Red Bull on one of Travis's jumps.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, man, even Trav and Gooch and Pat, we all have a talk before we go out, and we're professional about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we wanted to do was start creating a early season get together where we could get old dogs, young dogs, my guides together to say, let's all get on the same page. We don't have to call this a avalanche class. We don't have to call it shit. We're all going to just get together and train, period. And so that evolved into this. I mean, I think we're in year 7 or 8 now. We're going to actually host it in Utah this winter because we can't get everybody up here. But it's photographers, team managers, riders.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 48 spots. We fill it up every year. And each day we do coursework, just like you would in an avalanche class, where we go out, we dig pits, we critique each other's work, we record information. And then we do some first aid work, improvised toboggans, maybe how to improvise a splint, tree well extractions, nice. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We talk about head injuries, but this is outside stuff, like how to package people.
Yeah.
And then we go inside and we talk about what we saw that day, like professionals. We use professional words. We have an agenda and we click through that and we show these guys, like, being a backcountry professional really boils down to creating a process. Whether you're a rider, a filmer, a guide, a heli pilot, it's a process.
Mm-hmm.
So you wake up in the morning, check your weather, plan your route, look and see if what you thought was going to happen overnight happened overnight. Go out and take some observations. You know, all these things come together to create your objective for the day. We want to build a cheese wedge over here in the afternoon when there's sun on it,
right?
For instance. Yeah. Okay, well, what if the sun's been on it so long that the landing looks kind of avalanche-y? Well, what if we don't go on it today and it cools off overnight and it actually is good tomorrow but not good today? Great, right. Let's let it sit and go over here. So we do that kind of stuff with them. And then each evening we do a case study.
Mm.
You know, we've had Jeremy Jones out when he broke both his legs. We had him out. We had, Hostinick and so many people who were there when Bodie Merrill got buried in Alaska on an absence shoot.
Yeah.
And other people responded. Leanne was there. So that was a really cool one. We had Travis talk about his big avalanche from the fourth phase when he was back.
I see that.
So I think to be able to get everybody in a room together and get us in the same mindset, and then all of a sudden one of the bigger, you know, or somebody who had a significant experience is up there with tears in their eyes talking about the consequences and, you know, emotionally how it comes together. I think it really gives everybody that sense of this is fucking important. And if I fuck up, it really affects a lot of other people too. I got to have some responsibility with this opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's what we've been doing. We call it the risk maturity class.
I like that.
Because it's kind of like, Buffery came up with it. Nobody remembers the name, but I do, Buffery, because I love your names.
Roger that.
Right? ISO 3100. Did he talk about ISO 3100 at all?
No.
He didn't? That's a, Buffery. You got to have him on again.
I'm making a note right interview. Now.
ISO 3100 is a life-changing. It's amazing. But it's complicated, but it's great. Anyways, and that's what the Pat Moore class is a chance for everybody to get together. So we expanded it this year, and we actually made it so that everybody who comes to the course 2 days beforehand takes an actual first aid course.
Oh, yeah.
Because one of the things about backcountry skiing is, like, it's great to avoid all the shit, but, man, skiing through trees, you can catch your face on a lot of branches.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can dislocate a shoulder real easy. It's not an avalanche always. You can break your leg and die trying to get out. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we really went through a lot of that stuff. So now it's a 6-day class. They end up with 2 days of first aid and 4 days of practical, we call it, backcountry education. So practical means there's probably a third of it is inside, a third of it is outside, 2/3 of it is inside. It's a lot of coursework.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout the industry, we've gotten hundreds of people through this now, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten 3 skiers through it. And I give a lot of credit to them. You know, like Lexi DuPont called me up. She's like, I want in.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be a part of your community. I want to be a part of this thing. And it was like, fuck yeah, get in here, girl. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the cool thing is I've heard from a lot of people because we all know how to talk about it now. So I hear from people in the class and they're like, geez, we were out on this north facing slope. We dug 3 pits, but we got to mid slope and we realized there was a preserved surface ore and it cut loose on this kid down 30 cent, you know? And I'm like, they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They know what they're talking about and they're talking to each other about it. So I think, you know, as a thing for Pat and I and Dem and Buff and Walk and all the instructors to feel really good about is like, we have taken the actions to provide access to this. It's been really well, warmly welcome. Mm-hmm. And we've moved the needle. It's a safer place.
Yeah.
Even if there are accidents and things, we have definitely moved the needle. And that is such a great feeling. And that's what you guys are going to do with your podcast.
Thanks.
That's carrying it forward. Wow. Is like, that's what you really get a chance to do. And that's where that. 3-4 years later, you're going to hear from people that were like, you know, I did take that class. And, you know, I pulled my group off of this slope and it caught a couple snowmobilers. And we went and responded and got them out. And I was so stoked that, you know, it's like, right. You'll hear this stuff.
That's awesome. We're looking forward to that. Right now, we're getting a lot of stoke. People just getting back to us through Instagram, just being like, we just love the podcast. We can't stop listening. And it's a great feeling for us. We're just so humbled by it.
If I can leave, because I got to go to this call here soon, but if I can leave you guys and the listeners with one thing after this COVID closure and just how ski resorts are going to open this winter,
mm-hmm.
is that I think they're going to open with limited access on the hill and in the lounges.
Yeah.
And that's going to put a bit of pressure on our backcountry and more so our front country.
Yeah.
And what we can all remind each other about is we all – backcountry professionals, everybody with experience. I want more people. I don't care about terrain. I can go further.
Yeah.
Hardcores will find powder.
That's what I've been saying.
Don't let people fucking yell at you because you're right off of the parking lot trying to learn how to split board or with your verts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where you should be.
Exactly.
But you got to learn, you got to earn and learn the right to go to that ridge behind the parking lot. To go to the really remote places, you're not welcome there until you earn the right to be there.
Yeah.
And that means really learning about backcountry travel, learning about avalanche safety and preparedness, having a first aid ticket, having a proper satellite phone or spot communications. If you don't have that, stay the fuck out.
Yeah.
Agreed. You didn't pay the price.
Agreed.
But that said, I want everybody ski touring this winter, right off the highways, mm-hmm. everywhere.
That's what we're going
to
be doing.
Because we can get to you. We can help you. You can have little mishaps without huge consequences there.
Yeah. Agreed.
But please get those classes. The classes aren't enough. You need a couple years experience.
Yeah.
You need some of those close calls where your feet get wet in a creek and you can get back to your truck without frostbite. You need some of those.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you need mentors. Well, to go out with as well.
You need mentors. You need to do that. So I implore everybody. That's what this Volcom talk is going to be about. It's like, go get after it, everybody, but do not become a burden by not respecting the fact that you got to earn your way in. And if I like to try to weld, but I never took a welding class.
I can teach you.
Let me tell you, you don't want to be climbing a ladder that I welded.
I can teach you.
But you know what I mean?
It's all about, there's two things.
Let me teach you the right way too.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
With welding,
because the consequences as a professional welder of you looking at my shit welds is probably way worse than I think it is. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. It's all about rod angle and penetration.
Yeah, see? Two things I just take for granted.
That's how she goes.
Right on. Jeff, amen. Anyway. Amen for that message, man. Yeah, dude, I really appreciate you throwing that out there, because that is what this podcast is founded on, is getting everybody aware that they need to be aware, and that they need to get the training, and that they need to get the time, and that they need to go into the backcountry with the right mindset. So thanks for that message.
And enjoy the front country, because it's awesome. Powder's powder.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Go get it.
Absolutely.
Anybody gives you a hard time, ask them if they can just go a little further. No problem. You'll be right behind them in a year or two.
Right, exactly.
And you'll do it the rest of your life.
Exactly. That's the plan.
Hey, and you old guys out there, stick with it, man, because
go cat skiing.
You know, or go cat skiing. You know,
bacon.
If we can get in, you got bacon.
That's right. That's right.
I love it. So tell everybody where to get a hold of you, where to find Baldface online. And
we're just baldface.com. And we've got a beautiful new office here in downtown Nelson. And if you want to drop us an email or check anything out, just info@baldface.com. And we will get to you for sure.
Mm-hmm. And Baldface, @Baldface on Instagram and your other social media platforms.
I think so. Okay. God, I don't even, I think so. Okay. I think it's Baldface. Yeah, I think it's all Baldface. I'll look.
Okay.
We'll make sure it's in.
Well, thanks a lot for your time. And yeah, we're resonating everything that you're saying. And I agree 100% with that last message. It was fantastic. Thanks for that.
I'm thrilled for you guys. Can't wait to hear great things ahead.
Yeah, us too.
Thanks, man. Yeah, definitely appreciate your time on this crazy, crazy day for you. And you got a lot going on. And yeah, man.
You got it.
You're a prince.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Wow. So buzzing from that one. Thanks to Jeff for taking the time out of your crazy day to include us. We are humbled. As always, you can learn more about Jeff in the show notes. Hey gang, if you're loving our little podcast, please don't forget to follow us on Instagram @darkstarts.podcast to get info about our next episodes and to share your pics and vids. Also, feel free to share, like, and rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Stay tuned for our next episode where we talk with Abe Greenspan of Tahoe Lab Snowboards. We'd love to give a special shout out to Scott Martin of Groundswell Marketing Podcast and Pat Cornway for helping to make all of this happen. On a final note, we want to let you all know that we're going to be dropping to just one episode per week as the fall roars in and we can smell the snow on the horizon. We do appreciate you all, and we want you to know that this doesn't mean we're going away. We just want to make room in the calendar for some touring. Peace.